It's here and now. And unless you already live there, and we know we do have some listeners who do, it is time now to take a little trip to Alaska. Precisely. Here and now, resident chef Kathy Gunst is here to talk about Alaskan cuisine. She has just returned from a trip to our northernmost state. And Kathy, welcome back.
Hey, Jeremy.
So there's salmon in front of me, and I know we're going to get to that soon, right?
Promise we will.
Okay, good. All right. Okay. But first of all, you just got back from Alaska, and you found a lot more than salmon.
Oh, I sure did. I was so impressed with just the beauty of the place, but also the food is remarkable there. I was at a place called Tutka Bay. This is a wilderness lodge located at the head of this rugged 7-mile fjord. It's 9 miles from Homer, Alaska, and the only way to get there is by a seaplane or a water taxi. And there I met this remarkable woman, Kirsten Dixon. She's become a kind of ambassador of Alaskan cuisine. She is the chef and owner of Tutka Bay. And she's been there for close to 40 years. She's got a whole degree in culinary background and written a bunch of cookbooks. But she really seems to understand the Alaskan character.
Alaskans feel that we're a can-do people. We can survive the 30 below winter. We can get through on lean times. We can build the cabin ourselves. Preserving and canning, taking care of our food, being self-sufficient with our food is important. Gardening. We have a short, intense 100-day growing season, but the sun doesn't go down. So we can have enormous, beautiful gardens. They just don't linger around. They start late and they go early and they don't linger too long.
So she's not kidding about this light. It never gets dark in the summer, which, let me tell you, is really weird. It was really hard to wind down at night.
It really never gets dark.
At midnight, it's still quite bright. And every morning at breakfast, we would talk about different tricks we had for sticking sweatshirts in the window so that no crack of light came through. And I had a lot of trouble sleeping. But the vegetables do not have trouble sleeping.
Well, tell us about those. Tell us about these gardens that Kirsten Dixon is talking about.
So they have a 100-day growing period. Just think about that for a second. Just 100 days to make all the food that's going to happen for the entire year.
Wow.
Because winter comes quickly and intensely. But with 24-hour-a-day light, sunlight and light, they grow these gardens with enormous vegetables. And they really pride themselves on the size of the vegetables. And so many of these gardens are organic. Because it's so freezing cold in Alaska, they don't have a trouble with bugs and pests. They do have mosquitoes,
right,
however.
Course.
And they grow crops that you would think they would grow, like rhubarb and potatoes, broccoli, cabbage, kale, hearty kind of winter greens. And it's not just vegetables. Alaska's also quite famous for its berries. Every summer, the berries become ripe, and I'm going to let Kirsten tell you about it.
Wild berries in Alaska are particularly revered, and in many villages, all the women will gather to go berry picking together in August, and it will be a time of great social importance. You cannot get someone to come to work when it's time to gather together to go berry picking, and it's much more than just getting the berries. It's a time of getting away together and communally as women and camping a little bit and great sort of celebration and fun.
You know, Kathy, that reminds me of a trip I took once to another very northern state, Maine.
Your home state, yes.
Where I did go picking berries, blueberries, as a matter of fact, wild blueberries.
Yeah, they're everywhere there. And in Alaska, again, they grow huge berries. I saw strawberries. I've never eaten a strawberry so sweet in my life. And they are huge.
How big are we talking?
We're talking like very, maybe miniature golf ball.
Huh.
But usually that would mean they're overgrown and not sweet. They're perfectly red. I went to a few berry farms. It's big business there. There's wild blueberries, strawberries, huckleberries. There's also raspberries. There's something called a watermelon berry. They're quite proud of their berry population.
Okay, well, let's get away from berries because I'm still looking at the salmon in front of me.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I want to find out about
you
that.
We'd get
okay,
to
yes,
it.
Tell me.
Okay, so what I have in front of you is a West Coast wild salmon. I'm afraid it's not from Alaska. And this is my recipe where you cook down maple syrup, a great New England ingredient, let it become a glaze, and then you broil the fish or grill it with the maple syrup and add some sea salt. And here you go, Jeremy. What you have on top there is an Alaskan sea salt that's been smoked over alder wood. So you get this kind of slightly smoky, salty, and also sweet.
Mm.
Now, let me tell you a little bit about Alaskan salmon. You chew.
And let me say, I can taste that maple glaze.
Yeah, isn't that nice? Mm. Well, salmon in Alaska is quite oily because of the freezing cold waters. And there are five species that are really found in the Pacific Ocean. There's Chinook, which is the king salmon. That's the most prized, and that's huge, up to 150 pounds. There's coho or silver. There's sockeye. There's chum. There's pink. And these salmon are so full of flavor and omega-3s and nutrient. I talked to a guy in Anchorage, Rob Keenan. He's a chef at a place called Crush Bistro. And I said to him, so how would you describe wild salmon versus farm salmon? And he's like, to him, he said, East Coast farm salmon, it's like someone leached all the flavor out of it. But let me tell you, Jeremy, people are not the only ones interested in Alaskan salmon. It was my second to last day there. I wanted to see bears. I won't go into my obsession with bears, but I am obsessed. Hmm. So I met a guy named Jimmy Christensen. He's an Alaskan seaplane pilot and a bit of a bear expert, and went to Kenai National Park, which is where you go to see the bears. This is the place with those classic photos of the bears sitting on the waterfall with their mouths open.
Yeah.
And the salmon
waiting
just
for the salmon to just jump in.
So here's Jimmy.
Most of the bears here will be engaged in fishing activities, and sleeping is their other favorite thing to do after they eat a bunch of fish. So this time of year in the midsummer is in the height of the salmon run, so most of the bears we see will be fishing. And that's what everyone came here for, even the bears and everyone else here, too.
It's funny that he calls that fishing.
Yeah, right.
Just standing there with your mouth open, waiting for the fish.
I spent about 3.5 hours just watching them, quote, fish.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the bears just open their mouths. And when the salmon are running, 100,000 salmon move through this area. Mm. You literally feel like you could just put your hand in and pull them out. And there's fishermen and women all along the river fishing. And then there are bears everywhere. It was an incredible day.
So, Kathy, after this trip to Alaska, what would you say Alaskan cuisine is?
I think it's an emerging cuisine. Both Kirsten Dixon of Tutka Bay and Chef Rob Keenan of Crush Bistro in Anchorage talked about this growing consciousness of eating local foods and growing foods. It turns out that the state of Alaska will give refunds to chefs when they buy local foods. That's what kind of an emphasis there is on it. Because it's such a short season, they really are growing a lot of great foods. There's the fishing community. And of course, Alaska was owned by the Russians for over 100 years. And you still see Russian influences in some of the food. You see Asian and Japanese influences, of course, from the Pacific Rim. They all share the same waters. So
yeah,
there's this whole
sense.
Big fishing community. And you also see Scandinavian influences in pickling. They do a lot of pickling because they have to preserve food, a lot of canning. I saw juniper berry in a lot of dishes, a lot of smoking fish, a lot of gathering of mushrooms. You still see people drying salmon on hooks outside fishing camps, you know, that kind of postcard of Alaska that you imagine. And there's a lot of foraging and wild greens and a lot of attention to what you find in the wild, because if there's anything about Alaska, it's that it is still a very pristine and wild and spectacular place with a cuisine that's becoming more and more interesting.
Here and now, resident chef Kathy Gunst giving us her take on Alaskan food after a recent trip to Alaska. You can get recipes and maybe some bear photos at hereandnow.org. Kathy, thanks as always.
Thanks, Jeremy. Finish the salmon.
I will.
Meanwhile, the studio is sort of like a smelly mashup of Alaska and Vermont with maple syrup. Wonderful, wonderful.
I think we need to take the show on the road to Alaska.
I think we need to visit our listeners there, don't you?
I think so, absolutely. From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. Funding for Here and Now comes from Chipotle Mexican Grill, committed to the respect of animals, farmers, and the environment. Local sourcing and menu information at chipotle.com.